The podcast you're about to listen to is part of the Professional Casual Network. To find more podcasts like this, please check out professionalcasual.com.
The Professional Casual Network has gear. Check out teespring.com/store/professionalcasual for fresh new swag. A huge shout out to our sponsor, BeardedDragonGames.online. Pick up all your local game store goodness from Magic the Gathering, Dungeons & Dragons, Pathfinder, or WFURP 4th Edition, as well as terrain, paints, board games, comics, and more. Make sure to use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout for free domestic shipping or PCME10 for 10% off your total order at bearded dragon games.online. Also, a special thanks to Built Bar for sponsoring the show. To get 10% off your order and to help support the show, use code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout or use the link in the show notes.
Old World fans, the Professional Casual Network is starting a slow grow campaign in February 2024. The best part is, you can participate no matter where you are in the world. All you have to do is join our Discord and track your army's progress in the slow grow channels. We're starting February at 500 points and adding 250 points every month until we reach 2,000 points in August. Started late? Not a problem. Come join us in Discord to track your progress, get hobby tips, and help keep us all accountable throughout this campaign. Come grow with us in the old world. Hey, my electric casuals, and welcome to another episode of Beards, Ears, and Skulls, the best old world podcast on the internet. I am Taylor, your personal grudge bearer, and with me, as always, are one of my favorite people, my dwarf friend, Dan.
I don't appreciate that slander, but I am your friend.
Friend, you just... Anyways.
Also, hi!
It's weird calling an elf a dwarf friend, and you're like the most dwarfy between the two of us with your beard and your stubbornness.
You watch it. I know where you're going with this.
Oh, careful, man.
You're barely taller than me.
I wasn't even going to go there.
I definitely thought you're
going to
be like,
I am.
And you're short because you're under 6 feet tall.
And you're short because you're 5'10 or whatever.
What are you, 5'11?
And a half.
6 foot.
Oh, man. But today, wow. On Best, we're going to be talking about the brand new FAQ errata for Old World and what it means for your armies.
Whoa, this is, and just how much is in there?
It's huge, first of all. That's what she said. And secondly, this is the second FAQ that has come out since the game has been released like 2 months ago or 3 months ago. This is so un-GW. I'm very happy.
It's nice. And it clears up a lot of what people have been arguing about.
Right.
In terms of rules and how things weren't perfectly clear, and there's a lot of other things clarified that people might not have been talking about, but it's like, oh, okay, that would have come up eventually, so I'm glad they covered that.
And the thing is, a lot of it, and we'll get into this in more detail, a lot of it just makes sense, right?
Yes.
Like it was very rules as intended.
Mm-hmm.
And they just made it rules as written. It's really cool. But before we dive right into everything, I want to send a huge dowie thank you to our beautiful and wonderful patrons who support
patrons!
Us at Patreon, because I can words. Oh my gosh.
I can't.
I'm so tired. it's been a long week.
We could do it.
Right? Patreon.com/professionalcasual, folks. So these folks help us do what we do every day, keep the lights on, and keep Tim from eating his kids' lunch. And Tim's unfortunately not with us today, so he has no rebuttal for that.
Yeah, he's just gonna keep eating their lunches, because why wouldn't you?
Their lunches.
They get the best snacks.
Well, he doesn't have to eat their lunch because of our patrons.
Thanks, patrons. I'll eat their snacks.
Yeah, I eat my kids' lunch because they don't eat it. Like, we make them the most beautiful lunches. Anyways, huge shout out to our big subbies of X-Paxis, Rob Dagna, Cider Drinker, Tony Hot Hands, Otis Leroy, Iron Maze, Wizard Skills, Bicon, Briar Mage Tau, Cliff Jumper, and James. And we also have an Electric Casual tier on Patreon. I can't do it, man.
On Patreon. Casual.
So if you want to show your love for the old world, go ahead over to patreon.com/professionalcasual. Join the Electric Casual tier. Currently in there, we have Tony M, Meerkat, Stefan, Rev Right Mad, Cliff, Pagan Prince, and that's it.
And that's all of them.
And that's all of them.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. We did our intro in less than like 4 minutes, man. This is incredible.
That's because we don't have all of Tim's quote jokes in there.
Quote jokes.
Tim, I don't even know if he's going to listen to this later, so it's even funnier to me.
Well, it's like, you know, when you pick on somebody and they're not there to defend themselves, it's like the same thing, but double, because I don't know if he's going to listen to this episode.
Well, it's Tim, so he expects it, though, you know?
That's true.
Like, well, that's why he streams most days on Twitch in the afternoon for people to be mean to him, and he likes that.
Twitch.tv/professionalcasual. You can go network.
Professional Casual Network.
Professional Casual Network. They're all different, and it confuses even me, who is a member. But anyways, let's jump right into the stuff and the things. Dan, over on warhammer-community.com, there's this beautiful place called the Old World Almanac, right?
Yeah.
And in there is the latest FAQ and errata, version 1.1 for Warhammer, the Old World.
Yeah, they've actually made it very easy to get to, because if you just go to Warhammer Community and click on the menu and click downloads, and then you can select Old World, and it takes you right to all these, the FAQ, the errata, all of the legacy armies, which some got slight updates.
Yes.
Errata themselves, you know, sorry, pouring one out for Skaven, but we'll talk about those at the end.
It's not like it's the army you chose for our slow grow.
So close. I got 15 clan rats to finish. They got some paint on them, and then I'll have 1,000 points done for the slow grow.
Oh, which is heck very exciting. Man. That's awesome.
So
that's
close. Great.
Yeah, I have 500 points to finish. Yeah.
What are you doing? Like, having a life? Get on it.
No, I'm doing everything for other people.
I know.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so finding these is really easy. We're going to go over at least, maybe not every single thing, most of it, though, that we'll touch on and see, you know, not only just what is the change, but how is this going to potentially affect the game? What units out there are going to be able to are affected by these changes? Like the first one, if we're looking at the core rulebook errata,
it's huge, man.
There's a lot, right? Anything new is in magenta. Things that have been changed are in blue, which there are a couple. So it's like, oh, we had an answer for this, but we changed our minds, kind of thing.
And I'd say 70-80% of this are magenta.
Yeah, a lot of it. But it starts off right away with a clarification, a slight change about combat order. So while in combat order, a close order formation with a unit strength of 5 or more may claim a bonus of +1 combat result. So this changes it from saying it has to be at least 2 models.
Which is really good for things like, I'm not sure if a dragon, high elf prince on a dragon is close order. I can't remember.
Yes.
But if they are, they now get the +1 combat result, which is super dope.
So that's what it was. It wasn't before, it just said while in combat order, a close order formation may claim a bonus of +1. Now they say you have to have at least 5 unit strength.
Yep, which is super dope. It just clarifies, because it was a little weird, because, you know, I'm like, I'm close order, but I'm a single mini. Like, do I get the thing? Now it's like, oh, I'm behemoth with 5 wounds. Yay. Woo! I did the thing.
Nice and simple. This next one is one of my favorites, about heavy casualties.
Oh my gosh.
To change the first paragraph to, if during a single phase other than the combat phase, a unit loses more than a quarter of the models it contained at the start of that phase, it must make a panic test. I think the only difference there is adding other than the combat phase.
Yep, right.
It has its own rules.
And it's so silly, like, I could be very wrong, but I can't think of a reason why units would lose miniatures in miniatures in the combat phase other than just being in combat.
Like, I can't. Literally the only way to lose models in that phase.
So I can't think of a reason why that would happen. So it should be unnecessary. However,
there's a lot. There are quite a few things in this document that are unnecessary, but apparently somebody's asking, trying to gamify, you know,
it doesn't explicitly say that it doesn't, you know, that's kind of how I feel a lot of, yes. That's how I feel like a lot of these have happened.
Oh, absolutely.
I do like the clarification for chariot runners, where it's like, if you can draw a line of sight over or through models, which is really nice, Which again, it just makes sense. If you're in skirmish formation, you can go through chariot runners. Yay.
Pretty cool. I do also want to point out the heavy casualties is, I feel like we usually play this way without thinking about it, remembering that it's 25% of the models contained at the start of that phase.
Yep. Not when the turn or when the turn not like started.
Compared to the starting unit strength and unit yep. size. Yeah. But yeah, again, chariot runners, nice clarification.
Oh my gosh, I'm here so sorry. a rule that we never really see too often, evasive, which we went over a little bit in the High Elf episode.
Sisters of Avalorn have it.
Yep, so once per turn when a unit in which the majority of the models have the special rules declared to the target during the enemy shooting phase, the unit may choose to fall back in good order, fleeing directly away from the enemy unit shooting at it.
So the only difference there is they added the majority of the models have the special rule.
Gotcha.
So okay. Like if you have a character join them that doesn't have this rule, they can still do it.
Yeah, which I think is different for some other special rules. I think Stubborn might be one of them.
Yeah, things like that. Again, it's not really necessary because it just says once per turn when this unit is declared as the target in the original text. And now it's just saying once per turn when a unit in which the majority of the models have this special rule is declared as the target. So it's kind of like, it's just getting around those arguments. Oh, well, your whole unit doesn't have the special rule, so you can't do it now.
Right.
It's like, no, you can because the majority of them do. One or two characters doesn't get rid of it.
And it looks like, and correct me if I'm wrong, with Fire and Flee, that might be the same exact change. If the majority of the models in the unit are armed with missile weapons that have the special rule.
Yep, all they did was add the majority thing.
Yep, again, makes sense.
And we've got a lot more to go with the... what am I trying to say here? It's the errata. I was thinking of the FAQ is broken up into, like, these are all the ones for the Universal Special Rules.
Oh, yep.
The next one is Random Movement, which seems pretty straightforward, but they added something that actually makes random movement models and units a lot better. Okay. When a model with a special rule When a model with this special rule moves, roll the dice to determine its maximum movement. So before it just said to determine its movement. So it was kind of assumed that you had to go whatever you rolled. Now it says that's the maximum.
Oh.
So like your Mangler Squigs don't have to go the whole 18 if you roll that on accident. Right? So it makes things with random movement much more manageable than they were.
I like that a lot, actually. Yeah. For someone who has two Mangler Squigs, right, I'm a huge fan.
I like that it's still random, but it's not completely out of your control.
Yeah, which is super nice.
But again, makes the like goblin boss on a cave, giant cave squig is even better now. Like, I didn't want to go that far. You don't have to now.
And the next one, same deal. Majority of the models that have the special rule, that's it for reserve move. So yeah, it's not the entire unit needs to have it, etc.
No effective change there.
Yeah.
When you read over Swift Stride, as I take a look at what the original text said.
This one says a unit with consists entirely with models of the special rule. So I think that's the big change there.
Uh-huh. So now we're seeing it going the other way. You can't have anybody join a unit with Swift Stride and still use, if they don't have Swift Stride, you don't get the rule anymore.
Which again, that makes sense. If you don't know how to stride swiftly, you're not going to be able to do it with friends who do, right?
So yeah, you can't throw a high elf mage on foot in with your unit of dragon princes and still get Swift Stride. He slows them down, which makes sense. Like you said, all these things, maybe not all of them, but the majority of them just make sense.
Just makes sense. Yeah, the Berserker Blade, so that's on page 339. It's a magic weapon. They just changed the notes to the wielder of the Berserker Blade is Frenzy instead of giving the blade itself Frenzy. Which is kind
of... Is that the difference there? Yeah, because
in the original book, it says special rules for the blade is Frenzy magical attacks. So now it has a notes, the wielder of the Berserker Blade is frenzied.
See, that seems unnecessary to me.
It should be unnecessary.
Right, but it has the frenzy special rule. Obviously, it's giving it to the wielder. Like, the Sword of Swiftness just has strike first. The sword itself doesn't have strike first. The model using it has strike first.
Right, exactly.
What? It's one of those, like, why do they need that clarification? I don't understand that.
And an interesting
really people out there arguing, oh, well, you don't get an extra attack because your blade has frenzy, not the model. Like, that's the dumbest thing.
So, Dan, I just want to remind you that you and I are very rules as intended people. And there are people who this rule book is scripture.
But that's the rules for special rules on a weapon. That's how they work.
Now that the weapon is frenzy, Dan. So if the weapon attacks, then it gets an extra attack.
Right, you're attacking with the weapon.
But if the weapon's not attacking.
It's like, what?
No. I totally...
The next one here I actually don't like because it affects me negatively.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So just two episodes ago when we talked about High Elves the first time we talked about our 1,000-point lists, I had this next item on my prince on a dragon, the bedazzling helm. I can't do that anymore. It is now troop type infantry or cavalry only because they don't want dragons getting -1 to hit. I get it. I don't like it for me, but I understand.
No, it makes sense.
I mean, you can still have, you know, a pimped out elf prince on a barded elven steed with this. That's still awesome. But your, you know, 9-wound dragon isn't going to be -1 to hit anymore, which I think is better for the game.
I agree completely. And on page 344, we have dispelling a spell. The first bullet point is instead of if the result is equal to or higher than the casting roll, they change it to if the result is higher. So if the result exceeds the casting roll,
right,
the spell is dispelled, which was a issue, I think, earlier in the magic phase rules where you find dispelling. This is just an issue with the quick reference that they just are erotic-ing.
And it was also changing. Some versions of, I forget how you got the, came with like a cardstock printout of the quick reference, and it was on that as well.
Yep.
Which a lot, some people got confused, and it was like, no, go with the actual rule, not the quick reference. So everybody was already playing it this way, but correct. Again, good that it's clarified. Like, whoops, that was either a typo or a holdover from playtesting they forgot to change.
And jumping into the why did we have to clarify this?
Oh my god. Yeah, so now we're into the actual FAQs. Those are all the errata. So these are all questions that have been answered. And some of them you have to wonder, why was this a question?
So apparently a very frequently asked question was, if I mark the position of a unit, then move it before putting it back where it was and moving it again, does this count as a take back? People, don't be that guy.
Well, okay. I love the answer is yes, absolutely. The answer should be yes. That's the definition of a take back, which technically is against the rules. This is one that most people choose to ignore. Like, you can fiddle around with the unit a little bit before you're done. But like, I believe there's a rule near the very beginning that states like hand off the chess piece kind of thing.
Sure.
Which again, I don't want to play that kind of game. You know what
that's
I mean?
The like, thing. Like
almost anybody's going to say, yeah, that's fine. You can... Oh, walk it didn't quite fit? Okay, you can bring it back.
Walk up to the table, shake your opponent's hand, and say, hey, we're going to play by intention, okay? And just spell out exactly what your intention is. I want this unit to go here. Can I check to make sure that it fits? If it doesn't, can I just do a take back? Is that okay? I've marked where the unit is supposed to go.
Right. I think it is good to clarify it for, like, tournament play.
Agreed.
There's no argument. You can't take it back. You know, it's right in the FAQ here.
And this is something that we, as AMG lovers and play a lot of MCP, they actually have something in their MCP rulebook that says board state is supposed to be held by both players, right? So both players are supposed to make sure that the board is exactly how it's intended to be, right?
I like that.
Just be nice people. You know what I mean?
You're playing a game. You're doing it to have fun. Right. Like, again, I know if you're in like a tournament setting, you're probably playing to win. And I get that. But like, it doesn't mean you have to ruin the game like that.
People get weird when money gets involved, which I can understand.
Yeah.
I can totally understand that.
I've played enough tournaments to know how it can be. Sometimes you have a great time, and other times you're like, well, I hope I never play that guy again.
I'm sure there's people said that about me because I'm an idiot. Not because I'm a jerk, because I'm
dumb.
You just
laugh the whole time, and it's great.
Oh, my gosh. So, how does a close order unit of just one model act? Is it still a close order formation, or does it act like a skirmisher? A close order unit is a close order unit, even right. if it only contains a single model. Weird. If they don't have right. a skirmish special rule, they're not skirmishers. Strange how that works.
Yeah, I mean, so this is more like a close order unit of just one model. Like most of the time that's going to be ridden monsters or monsters. Like obviously they're not skirmishers because they have the close order. Like, does it act like a skirmisher? Does it have the skirmisher special rule? No, then it's not a skirmisher.
Right.
Again, why is this a question?
Why is this a question? And if there was something in the rule book somewhere that we missed where it's like, oh, that actually sounds like it could have been acting like a skirmisher there, fair enough. But it's not a skirmisher. It's a close order unit that does not have the skirmish rule, then it's not a skirmisher.
The only thing I could think of was I was watching Steve's video going over this on Mountain Miniatures where he was like, okay, so the only thing he could think of where that would come up is like, if you have a unit that's reduced down to one model left,
okay,
they don't become a skirmisher. Which, yeah. Again, why
would they? They don't have the skirmisher. People rule.
Think that because they don't have the skirmisher special rule.
What's our next one here? Does a unit count as being obscured when some of the models within it are behind others?
In the same, this one breaks my brain. Okay, so I have my second rank is obscured by my front rank. Get out! Just stop it. Did you read the rules? Like, why are these questions? No, a unit cannot be obscured from the enemy by itself. Come on. Are you shooting the second rank of the unit anyway? No.
I didn't realize we could call shots on individual models, like just rank and flank models of the unit themselves. I didn't realize that was a thing.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah, I'm going to love how ridiculous it is.
Right. I'm going to pinpoint with my Thunderers the unit four, like rank four, model C.
Oh, they have heavy cover.
Right. Yeah, you get to choose who's getting hit, not who you're shooting. Oh my gosh. The next one, again, I get it. I don't like it. As someone that plans on playing a lot of Magic, if a wizard has a magic item or special rule, like High Elves, the Lilias Blessing, they get to do this once a turn, that allows them to reroll a failed casting roll. Can they reroll a natural double one and avoid a miscast? No. Because a roll of a natural double one isn't merely a failed casting roll. It is a miscast.
It's a good clarification.
It is. Again, yep. I understand as a high elf player, I don't like it because it makes Lilias Blessing a little worse. And when I played against Friend of the Network, Andy, who you'll hear from next week, I did that. I rolled a double one and I was like, oh, miscast. It was my first roll of the game. And he was like, Lilias Blessing, you got this, reroll. And I was like, oh, yeah. So I did. And now I can't.
Yep. And actually, with the new Orcs and Goblins book, they also have an item that allows them to reroll casting rolls.
The Knobbly Staff or something like that.
Instead of just dispelling rules. So this it's in multiple armies where this actually matters now. And it's a good clarification.
Yeah. Again, I get it. Like, if you miscast, you should suffer the consequences. Or you should have to pay more for something that specifies you can reroll a miscast, like maybe a slant or something like that.
Yeah, there was in 8th, there was a, what was it, the Earthing Rod, where you could, like, use it once to reroll a miscast result. But I don't think...
I think
it was
that's the result same on the as miscast it is now. Table,
right? Oh, is it? Okay, cool.
I believe that's what Earthing Rod does, because it's, like, grounding you, right? You get a chance to not miscast.
Yep.
Or you get a chance to reroll the miscast if you get something real bad. But it's not like your wizard's going to get sucked into the warp anymore anyway, so.
This is another weird question where it's like, really, dude, can a wizard with a physical attribute that counts as a type of armor, such as Treemant Agent's Arboreal Armor, make a casting or dispel roll? And of course, yes. Like, why would you build... Why would you build
your
a wizard?
Your Skink Priest can't... You can't... Your Skink Priest just can't... cast magic because they have light armor scales.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, we made wizards that you have to pay extra points for because they're wizards. We actually gave them counts as armor, and now you can't cast spells. We did this on purpose. That doesn't make sense.
Right, and it specifically says counts as light armor. Not that they're the equipment is like scaly skin or whatever. The equipment isn't light armor.
And I'm sorry, everybody, that we're a little salty about this. It's just... maybe it's because we're dads. I don't know. Like, this is just, these shouldn't be questions.
We're dads. We both have spent time in the classroom dealing with things like this. And it's just so many of these questions, you know, are there from people trying to, cook the system and take advantage of it.
Yeah. But mom said I couldn't have dessert. And a cookie's not dessert. It's a cookie.
Right. Like, sounds like I'm arguing with my 5-year-old when he's like, no, you said this. I'm like, no, I misspoke. It's this. And he's like, no, you said it.
I understand what I said it.
But I
go
didn't.
Away. Right. I'm also saying this now.
So somebody in the Discord was talking about how that particular ruling actually really hurts lizard men in particular. I can't find exactly how they worded it now, but they were saying, here it is. Rhett was saying this.
Sure.
Lizardmen can't take magic armor, can't take any magic armor but shield, since the ruling about counts as heavy armor isn't heavy armor, so doesn't impede spellcasting, means they don't have armor or the ability to buy it.
On their wizards.
Well, because, so, I'm going to bring up the Lizardmen quick.
Do they have, wait, what? I'm not following.
So the argument is that something like a Scar Veteran or Old Blood, you know, your Saurus characters, because their equipment is hand weapon and scaly skin that counts as heavy armor, because they can't be equipped with armor, they don't have an option to like upgrade to full plate or anything like that, means they can't buy magic armor. Other than shields, because they can equip a shield. But again, I'm double checking crossover rules here for that. So say only a model that is equipped with or has the option to be equipped with armor, a shield, or barding may purchase a magical equivalent. Model can only wear a single suit of armor and can only carry one shield, and a mount can only wear a single suit of barding. Therefore, magic armor replaces any mundane equivalent the model is or may be equipped with. So the argument is because Saurus characters, pretty specifically, don't have heavy armor, as that FAQ clarifies.
Yep,
they cannot take magic armor unless it's a shield, because they can take a shield for 2 points.
I don't like that, but okay.
I don't either, but like,
no, it actually does say that
based on the rules and they don't have any of their own actual magic armor. They have Shield of the Mirror Pool, so it's shield, and the Hide of the Old One, Hide of the Cold Ones, which specifically says may be worn with other armor. It's not a suit of armor. It just improves your armor by one, but makes you stupid.
I like that.
So, like, they don't have it in their own book, so it only precludes them from taking magic armor from the core book, but, like, you know, they can't take Armor of Destiny. They can't take Armor of Silvered Steel. They can't take Glittering Scales.
So, Dan, let me ask you this, since you know more about lizard folk than I do in Old World, specifically Lizardmen. They're not really known to wear suits of armor, are they? Like, they usually just have a shield and like some crazy sword thingy.
They typically don't, no.
So that makes sense to me then, I guess.
I feel like in like 8th edition, I think you could give them light armor, like Saurus characters would have, like, their scaly skin gave them a 6-up, and then you could give them light armor. They never had heavy armor or anything like that.
Gotcha.
And all their stuff counts as light armor or heavy armor. I wanted to double check. I think the only ones that did wear armor were Temple Guard, I think, had light armor on top of their scaly skin, which made them different from Saurus.
Gotcha.
In Old World, they have scaly skin that counts as heavy armor and shields. No light armor or anything like that. So they have equivalent of heavy armor, obviously. So do just basic Saurus. So yeah, nowhere in the book does anybody have an actual option for armor.
Interesting. Let me, and just real quick as a total aside, I miss the named characters for Lizardmen because some of the named characters were just tic-tac-toe. It's like the best name.
Or Croak, because he was dead and a frog.
Right? Teto Echo is just another great name.
Echo. Oh my gosh, there's so many good ones. Krokgar and Grimlock.
Oh my gosh.
Carnosaur. Oh, so good.
It's so, just the names themselves were absolutely incredible. Yeah, I do see a Skink Chief can take light armor. I'm looking at the old 8th edition book.
Yeah, because Skinks definitely didn't have scaly skin in older editions.
Yeah, Sora Scar Veteran could take light armor. So maybe that was an oopsie oversight. Who knows? Who knows?
Yeah,
who knows?
I mean, so it just, yeah, so your Sora's characters can't take core book armor. Interesting. Which I might have to double check my planned list to see. I think I gave him the... I think my Scarvet in that list has the Cold One Pants.
Cold One Pants.
Like the Troll Hide Trousers. I'm just going to call them the Cold One Pants.
While you're looking that up, I'll go up to... We're now into movement. Can a unit that rallies and reforms during the rally fleeing units subphase move during the movement phase? Answer is yes. Kind of makes sense. And this is another one where it's like, why did you have to ask this question? Can a unit move whilst locked in combat?
Oh, this is the best one.
The answer is just no. It says no, period.
Just no. It's no. Like, you just stop it.
The answer, the question was whilst locked in combat. You kind of answered your own question.
Right? The word, you already have the word locked. Like, that classic tweet from like a flat earther group, and it's like, you know, we hope to see more people join our cause from around the world, and people are responding to it like, you see what you put there? Did you see what word you used?
Yeah,
around? Did you see what word you used? Locked?
Just come on. This next one is a good clarification. Does a unit that has to declare a charge due to being frenzied or impetuous have to do so if a friendly unit of skirmishers lies between it and a potential charge target, obstructing its movement? And the answer is, if there's a chance of the skirmishers moving so that they're no longer an obstruction, like if they declare a charge, for example, then yes. Otherwise, no. So what this changes is, if I'm impetuous or frenzied, I don't have to force myself to make a failed charge, right? Because I can't actually get to where I'm supposed to go. It's an impossible charge. I don't have to declare it, which is a nice clarification there.
There's a lot about charging and forced to charge and not making, you know, impossible charges and things like that in this FAQ.
Yes, and one of the big ones is marching column and drilled and all that sort of stuff. Oh my gosh, I was confused by drilled since I read it, and I think most of the community was as well.
Oh yeah,
and everyone just ignored it.
Well, it was such a wild rule. We've never seen a rule like this in a version of Warhammer before, at least that I've come across. And it's so much better than anybody thought. Like, everybody was like, you know, people that were on the more lenient end of how this rule should be played are still undervaluing it and underestimating it. Drilled is like the ultimate maneuver.
Yeah.
Rule. It's crazy.
In a game about maneuvering.
Right? So, yeah. So this first one, did you read it over?
No, go ahead.
So, although it cannot make a charge move, a unit in a marching column can declare a charge. Why is this? Which starts talking about drilled.
Yep.
Right? There are several reasons. Firstly, a drilled unit that declares a charge whilst in marching column can freely regest the ranks to adopt combat order after determining its charge range, but before moving, thus allowing it to make a charge move. It's like, boom, that answers a huge question that people have been arguing about for weeks.
Since drilled came out.
Right? Can you use the drilled to regest the ranks before charging? In the
answer
rules,
is yes.
Most people were saying yes, or just not taking drilled when it was an option and just ignoring it. Because it didn't say, it just says when a unit's not fleeing, you can do this.
Yep.
So there was nothing stopping you from taking it before the charge, but it just seemed too good, and it is. Secondly, units that are obliged to declare a charge in certain circumstances, such as being frenzied or impetuous, must do so even whilst in marching column. If they cannot make the charge move, they don't move at all, and the charge is failed. Which is interesting, as they say, they don't move at all, and the charge is failed, because when you have a failed charge, you typically do move, but it specifies they don't move. So it's like, that's a weird spot, but yeah, they can't charge and they don't move.
Yeah, that was a little oxymoron for sure.
Right. And it says this prevents marching column being used to avoid declaring compulsory charges. Alternatively,
and this is one that I really like.
I just love how this is, you know, we have an answer of no, and we have a 3-paragraph answer here. Alternatively, there might be a psychological advantage to declaring a charge with marching column. For example, the unit might cause terror, or the charge target might already be fleeing. Of course, it isn't easy to set up situations where such tactics can be used, and therein lies the challenge. I'm just curious, how many units that can be in marching column cause terror?
Yeah, that's fair.
What that's units totally cause fair. Terror? Like, other than single models, like a big, you know, monster or a character with something that causes terror, I guess that would be about if you have a character in the unit with like a magic weapon that causes terror or something right. like that could potentially do it. But
the weapon is terror, but the model actually doesn't have terror because the weapon is
right. And they're swinging that weapon around trying to terrify you. You're going to be skirt.
You know who causes terror, Dan? Hammers.
Just in my pants. And they make me pee. As I charge them because I made a mistake.
Old Phoenix Guard used to do the same for me, so don't worry about it.
Right? Yeah, but they're not nearly as good.
Jeepers.
So then our next question is directly about drilled. If a drilled unit in marching column, here we go again, has to declare a charge due to being frenzied or impetuous, so now we're getting real specific, can it choose not to use drilled to redress the ranks and adopt combat order? Whew.
Yep.
So my first thought here is Dragon Princes are impetuous. They're really expensive, but you could take enough to be in marching column. Like say you've got a unit of 10 and you go 3-3-3-1 or something like that. Right. Or I don't even know what you're going to do there. Can you choose to not drill? No. If it's able to redress the ranks, i.e. there's space for it to do so. No. The unit that is obliged to charge must endeavor to make the use of any special rule it has in order to charge. The unit just really wants to charge, and it'll play this game without you if it has to.
I love that.
I like when they add a little bit of humor into here. Like, this is a person wrote this, you know?
Yep.
Like,
it's not... absolutely. And so again, you know that person is sitting there just being like, ha.
You're not going to understand why I said this, but it'll be funny to me. But again, clarifying that drilled. So if you're forced to charge, you have to try to, you have to use all of your rules to the best of maybe your advantage to charge.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it depends. Like if you're playing Orcs and Goblins and your entire army is impetuous and you don't want to actually charge, guess what? Orcs and Goblins are like, I'm going to do it anyway. Screw you. Which is very orky. You know,
it fits them.
It fits them very well. I love so this is something that next week we'll talk about with Andy, that him and I are in the same mindset of impetuous is extremely orky, right? Because they're like, no, I want to go into combat. Screw you. I'm going to do what I want.
Yeah.
Whereas getting rid of the fun flavor of animosity sucks at the same time, right? Animosity, arguably terrible. Just absolutely terrible. But impetuous replace, you know, but it was so orky, it was so characterful, like it made so much sense for Orcs and Goblins. I mean, but replacing it with impetuous, so orky. Orcs and Goblins,
I think impetuous instead of animosity is just better for the game.
I agree. And that's more or less what we were getting at, was it made sense because orcs are now actually more competitive, right? They actually have a place on the table, right?
Without building the entire list around animosity.
Yep.
Like, you can still do it with black orcs all over the place to quell the impetuousness, because now they affect like units within their command range or something like that.
Yep.
Which I learned when I played against Andy. But like, impetuous isn't as game breaking as animosity was, at least when I rolled animosity.
Well, you mean 17 times in a row with your level 4? Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, right. So this next one, if I want to charge an enemy that's a large target with a unit of mine that is in its front, with a unit of mine that is in its front arc, for example, but cannot because the enemy unit is already engaged in its front arc, can I instead charge its flank? No. Sometimes a charge is impossible. Again, you're not in its flank to do a flank charge. You can't charge its flank.
Right. Otherwise, you could just throw your chaff in and be like, oh, he's engaged in the front now. Let me charge it in the Let me charge it in the flank with my big old block of whatever. Like,
if that was possible, it would say so in the rule book.
If it was possible, why would you even bother having front and side arcs?
Right. I'm going to charge you when I choose the rear this time.
What? That's actually clarified later on as well.
Just golly.
Or I think it was there might be a question, or maybe it was an earlier FAQ that was like, no, you have to go, like, even if you roll super high for like a random movement, you can't like loop around into the back of something. You have to try to do the shortest distance.
Oh, I see that. Yeah.
I forget. I don't know where that one is now, but yeah, doesn't really matter. Let's see. Under shooting, there's only one new FAQ. I mean, there are other questions and things in here, but we're not going over all the ones from the first iteration of the FAQ. Just, you know, pretty much just the new ones.
Yep.
So this one's interesting. This one's not really interesting. This one, again, is super obvious. Some chariots are equipped with large-scale missile weapons, such as bolt throwers. Who shoots such weapons? The crew, the beasts that draw the chariot, or the chariot itself? Right, because your Stegodon's going to shoot that giant bow. The missile weapons mounted on chariots, or howdahs, are shot by the crew, using their ballistic skill. That's why they're the crew. They're crewing the weapon. Come on!
It's so stupid.
It makes me so mad.
It's so stupid.
Without actually being mad, it's just like... Oh, like it's the kind of stuff I hear all the time.
right. Oh my gosh. In the question, it says, does the chariot shoot the missile weapon? Why? How does the
chariot
even
itself
work?
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
How does it work? Yeah, yeah. The Iron Blaster is actually shot by the Rhinox.
Exactly. <You know>? Like, what?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the Stegodon's gonna reach up there with its long neck and blow on those giant blowpipes to shoot. Come on, man.
So models in the fighting rank, we're on to combat now, that are killed before they have a chance to fight cannot. But can a model make a supporting attack if the model in front of it is slain? The answer is yes. Good. If they have not been killed. Models able to make supporting attacks can do so as normal. In other words, casualties inflicted reduce firstly the number of models in the fighting rank that are able to fight, and secondly the number of models in the supporting rank that are able to fight. It's a good clarification. It also just makes sense.
And it's another one of those, that's how everybody was playing it already. I know. Yep. There was some discussion in the very first couple of days, maybe weeks, where people were saying, well, you know, like if you have spears, if the guy in front dies, the spear behind him couldn't attack because they have to step up into that space and now they're in the fighting rank and now they can't attack, which I didn't agree with at all. And it's, again, it's good to see that clarification. They're like, yes, the guy behind can still attack.
Yep, it makes sense. But again, good clarification. Same with the next one. How many attacks can a model with a split profile make if it's in the fighting rank but not in base contact with the enemy? A model with a split profile consists of not one model, but several all sharing the same base, which I really love that wording a lot. Mm-hmm. Isil-esque comes to mind. I know they're not in this game right now, but it's two actual individual miniatures. It's a demon prince with a demonette on top on one base, right?
Or even just chariots, you know?
Just chariots, exactly. Well, the chariot is shooting the missile weapon, so it can't actually fight right now. So the clarification is, therefore, sorry,
so good.
Therefore, so good. Each model on the base can make one single attack In the case of a cavalry model, for example, this would be one attack from both the rider and their mount.
Right. Again, so your Tomb King chariots, if you got them pretty wide, they might not all be in contact. You're still going to get an attack from each crew member and each skeletal horse, like as it should be.
Yep. Makes sense. Mini, which again, it's a good clarification that a mini isn't whatever's on the base. It is each individual piece of the split profile.
Right. And that's why we have the split profile rule.
Yep. Yep. Can a close order unit of just one model claim the close order combat result bonus? Love this question.
And I love that this backs up what they have in the errata.
Yes, provided that it has a unit strength of 5 or more, as per the errata on page 1. It even pulls that out, right?
Right. Sort of cites itself.
Yep. Yep. And as mentioned previously, just in case you thought they were skirmishers for some reason, a close order unit of just one model is still a close order unit.
Yep. Oh my goodness. Yeah, my high elf on a dragon's one model, so it's a skirmisher, right?
Oh my gosh.
The next thing we have here in combat is our first blue, which means it's something that has been further revised from the first edition of the FAQ. If my unit loses a round of combat and either gives ground or falls back, can it choose to use a different weapon in the next turn if the enemy made a follow-up or pursuit move? I think this is a valid question.
Yep.
But the answer is no. Even though the units separated momentarily, they remain locked in place and engaged in an ongoing combat once the follow-up or pursuit move has been made. In other words, because the combat is ongoing, neither unit is able to swap one weapon for another. Again, this is something that doesn't come up very often, unless you've got, like, oh, I want to switch from my great weapon to my hand weapon for whatever reason. I don't want to strike last, but, you know, my army has the thing that I have, plus one or just minus one armor. No, you can't switch them out once you're in that combat unless somebody, like, doesn't follow up and then charges in later. Then it's a new combat.
So there was a question of, like, with follow-up, pursuit, etc., that can count as a charge. So it's like, oh, well, I can use my lances again. But I've chosen hand weapons. Can I just choose my lances again? It's such a weird piece there.
Yeah. And I'm glad that lances complicate it even more because in that case you can, cause lances have special stuff.
So I guess like if you charge the lance unit, right. And they choose their hand weapon, but they break you and you fall back in good order and they pursue you, it counts as a charge. Can I switch to my lance?
Ah, there we go. Yes.
Right.
Right.
So, you cannot do that.
You can't.
You can hold still and then pull your lances out and then charge them next turn if it's your turn.
Right. Yeah. That's a great way to describe it. Yeah. You're stuck still using those hand weapons. I mean, I guess you could have used the lances, but they would effectively be like hand weapons anyway.
Yep.
Actually, I don't think you can use lances unless it's the first, unless you charge.
Right. So challenges, this is super fun for, for wizards who want to get into combat, Slaanesh demons. If a wizard engaged in a challenge knows and uses an assailment spell that can hit multiple enemy models, such as an assailment spell that uses a template, are multiple enemy models hit, or is it only the other participant in the challenge that can be hit? When an assailment spell is cast in a challenge, it can only hit the other participant in the challenge. This is a good clarification, especially with the template.
Yeah. And it's another one that, like, I kind of get it. I don't like it. I don't think it makes sense. If you're dropping a template, it should hit the unit. But that's kind of the point of a challenge, rules wise. Like,
I agree.
It's one of those things. It's it's abstract. You can just say, well, you know, imagine that the rest of the unit have all taken a few steps back to give everybody room. And now that assailant spell doesn't hit them. You know, because the combat's all abstract anyway. Your guys aren't actually in perfect lines in front of each other. You know, it's a swirling melee.
They're only in perfect lines when they're moving, right?
Right.
So I don't particularly enjoy this, mainly because I feel like that is a fun mechanic to build your list to be able to do. Mm. But it could come back with some feel bad moments, right? So perfect example is I have like a lone Slaanesh mini who charges in super fast, declares a challenge, and their only job is to declare a challenge, you accept it, and I blast the whole unit with an assailment spell, right? So I understand how that could be a feel bad moment. So I do like this and I don't at the same time, because that sounds like a really fun list to make.
Yeah.
You know,
and I get it as rules writing.
Yep.
That sure. makes so much more sense.
And the same thing with the next one, impact hits and stomp attacks and a challenge go against the other participant in the challenge. Right. Makes sense.
Yep. I think if you're on the receiving end of that, you're not going to like it, but you know, you do all the things with challenges before any initiative step. So
yeah,
there you go. And initiative 10 happens after that.
Yep. And it sounds like in the next question that the challenge is the entire current combat phase, right? So if one participant in a challenge is killed, can other models engaged in the same combat direct their attacks against a survivor when it's their turn to fight? No.
Nope.
Even if one participant is slain, the challenge is considered to be ongoing until the end of the current combat phase, which I do enjoy that. So right. your initiative steps might take a few minutes. In an actual combat, they take seconds.
Right.
Right.
It's all happening so fast.
Right. Exactly.
And again, that would completely defeat the purpose of a challenge if you could do that. Like, oh, right. I killed your guy. Oh, now I'm dead too because the rest of you guys swarm me. No, that'll happen in the next round if you're still there.
Ooh, Armorbane X special rule. Does it apply to spells cast by models with the rule? And no. That's kind of nice.
Yeah, so like, I'm trying Forge to think of an fire. Example of somebody that might have this like innately.
A rune lord on an anvil.
I thought those weren't spells.
Shut up.
They are. So I want to double check here. So like, okay, armor bane is something that like a bruiser has naturally, right?
Gotcha.
Armor bane 1. That means the spells that the butcher cast don't also have armor bane 1.
Yeah.
Yep. Which makes sense. Again, if they have armor piercing, it's in the spell.
Yeah.
I can see the argument like, well, the model has armor bane 1. This is something the model's doing. I feel like it's not completely necessary, but it is a good clarification.
So it's rules as intended, right? The reason that the butcher has that rule is because he has a massive fatty arm and a huge massive fist. And
right, because he's real strong.
Right. And that's not going to carry over to him casting a magic missile.
Exactly. So right. This one I completely agree with. Again, I don't think it was super necessary, but it will have arguments not happen.
Yep, for sure. I love this next one.
Oh my God. This is where I was talking about how drilled has become like the best rule for maneuvering.
Yeah. I want to change all of my slow grow lists now. Just put as much drilled in as I can.
You give everybody drilled.
Well, that's the thing. Like dwarves with shield wall and drilled is just mint.
Gross.
So can a drilled unit redress the ranks before giving ground? Answer is yes, because they're not a fleeing unit. So what that means is should any part of the unit like cross over the battlefield edge while it's giving ground, the entire unit is removed from play. Drilled actually counteracts that. If there's a chance to counteract that, it can. That's dope.
Yeah, because it just says that they can perform a free redress the ranks maneuver immediately before moving. It doesn't say during the remaining moves phase or anything like that. So even though it's giving ground and backing up, it's moving so they can redress the ranks.
Reform the line.
It's so stupidly good.
It's so good.
Or can be in the right circumstances.
Absolutely. Hey, oof. I'm going to flee off the table unless I form a single file line.
Yeah.
And I'm an inch away.
The next few are all about fly, which some of them are kind of funny. The first one I was surprised by. Do effects that modify a model's movement characteristic also modify how far a model with the fly X special rule can fly? Sorry, that's not the one I was thinking it was. But yes, the model has fly X special rule. The number given in brackets is essentially the second movement characteristic. Any effect that modifies one will modify both.
Makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Can a model with two versions of the fly X special rule combine both and fly further?
No. No.
Again, essentially has two movement characteristics it can use when flying. Of these, you may use the best.
Yeah, so but I have wings and I'm on a carpet, Dan.
Right. Okay. I was trying to think of an example of how you can even do that. I was like, what flying characters could you put on a flying creature? I don't even know.
Probably a spell that'll give a unit fly X.
Maybe. But then to ask, can you combine them? Why? Why would you be able to combine them?
I don't know, man. People are weird.
So if a unit with Frenzy or Impetuous has two movement characteristics, for example, it can also fly, does it have to use the greater when determining if it must declare a charge?
Ooh.
Right. If it's able to use the greater, then yes, it must. Technically, you might not want to, but a frenzied lord of chaos on a mighty dragon doesn't care about your tactics. So like, yeah, again, you have to do everything you can to make that charge if you're subject to one of those rules. In this case, it's use the higher movement value.
So I found it. It's Steed of Shadows. So it's a friendly troop type who's infantry. So I don't know any infantry that can fly off the top of my head. I'm sure there are some. They gain the fly 12 special rule. So, yay, we did it. We found it. We saved the day.
let's see. Where's the one I was just thinking of with like fly and terrain? It might have been magic.
While you're looking that up, I'm gonna go over if I have frenzy and I get frenzy again, do I get two attacks? No.
I'm so frenzied right now.
You're just frenzied.
I'm frenzying so hard. Yeah, you're frenzied or you're not.
Listen, if you're drunk and you get drunk, you're still just drunk. You know,
I don't know if that's the best example because you can get more drunk.
Okay. Yeah, it's fair. Shut up. Oh man. Oh, here was the one you were talking about before. So can a unit with a random movement special rule move around or pass an enemy unit out of one arc and into another before making contact? No, they go in a straight line, dude. Come on.
Right, and again, the charge rules say you charge into the flank that you are in the arc of.
And you also need to, and remember this, people, especially if you're coming from 8th edition, you need to wheel. Depending on your troop type, depending on your order, your formation, you need to wheel as well, even if you're a single model.
Another one about random movement here. How far does a unit with a random movement special rule move when giving ground? 2 inches.
Everyone.
Same as everything else. Same thing that happens to everything else. When a unit, what happens to a unit with random movement when it gets struck by lightning? It
two
backs
inches.
Up 2 inches.
2 inches.
Again, I like that one as a clarification because somebody could totally game that and be like, "Oh, I move this." Well, okay, yeah, my elven cavalry moves 8 inches. Doesn't mean I move 8 inches when I give ground. I move 2 inches, like the rule says. And the next one here, okay. So I'm glad to see this because
it tripped us up.
It did for a little while, and then I had to kind of go back on it. You know, the whole can you stack regeneration? No. Armor values given as a target number cannot be combined to lower the target number. As with ward saves, only a single regeneration save can be attempted, and different regeneration saves cannot be combined together. If a model has more than one regeneration save, simply use the best.
Yep.
Like, okay, fine.
It would have been really cool, though.
Right. This next one I love. If a unit with stupidity fails its leadership test, how long is it stupid for? You're stupid for the rest of your Warhammer career for asking this question. So the answer is units test for stupidity in each of the starter turn subphases unless they're engaged in combat. By extension, a unit that fails a stupidity test remains stupid only until it passes a subsequent test.
It's dumb.
It seems so obvious, but people have questions, I guess.
I love this next one, though, because I haven't even fathomed a unit of skirmishers with stupidity.
This
hilarious.
This is a legitimate question.
Yeah. So if they succumb to stupidity, which direction are they moving? They should continue moving in the general direction they moved the previous turn, or if they did not move in the previous turn, towards the nearest enemy unit, which is cool. That's going to cause some headaches, but it's cool.
Yeah, the way skirmishers are so loosey-goosey already, like they need this is actually a necessary clarification because, again, somebody could totally game the system here where it's like, oh, well, I move, you know, I'm stupid, so I'm going to move back, you know, in a totally advantageous way where that should not, like, stupidity is a negative. It should not be good for you when you fail it.
I love the way they worded the next question and the next answer for it as well. We all wondered this too. Right? Swift Stride enables a model to move further during a charge move than its maximum possible charge range. Why is that? Because they are really, they like going fast. They just really like going fast. Models with this special rule delight in running down cowards who flee before a charge. They want to go fast, guys. Let them go fast.
Get back here. You're obsessed with going fast.
I love going fast. I don't even like Sonic. Like,
all right, now we're on to characters.
Yeah, characters always trip me up.
There's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of extra rules about them. So a character mounted on a ridden monster or chariot can choose to use their own or their mount's armor value, whichever is better. If the character wears magic armor, but I choose to use the mount's armor value, can I still claim other benefits conferred by the magic armor? No, you must use a magic item fully or not at all.
It makes sense. It's a good clarification.
Yeah, again, so you can't get away with like, okay, my high elf prince only has light armor. I didn't want to pay for full plate, but my dragon has full plate armor, so I'm going to roll the dragon save, but then I'm going to use the ward save I get from the light armor. Yeah. No, you can't do that.
The next one is very Captain America. If a character mounted on a ridden monster or a chariot carries a shield, does that improve the mount's armor value? Not unless you're Captain America. So no, a shield is carried by the character, not the mount, right?
Right,
so,
again, like, duh.
Yeah, I mean, the chariot cannot shoot the howdah. The character is the only one holding the shield.
Right, the dragon doesn't benefit from the tiny shield on its back.
I love this next one, too. If a warband character joins a unit that isn't a warband, does that unit's rank bonus modify their leadership characteristic? No.
It says right in the rule, there has to be a majority of the models. Stop it! How about this one? Some magic items or special rules allow specific models within a unit to be targeted. Do such attacks ignore the lookout serve rule? No, actually.
Oh, okay. That's a good clarification.
So, like, your Hawkland long rifle, you try to shoot, I'm going to take out their BSB in a couple turns of plinking wounds off. They still get lookout, sir. Which, something like a Hawkland long rifle might specify that it gets around that, but if it doesn't specify that, then no, you can still look out, sir.
I'm actually, I'm going to go look up their, what is it, the tree elf, the wood elf, Azrai arrow thingy, the arrow of screw that character.
Okay. I don't remember that one exactly.
So this was something I think they added in their 8th edition book.
Yeah, I didn't play against that one much. Okay, so the Hawkland Long Rifle, as you're looking that up, just says can target a specific model within its target unit, such as a champion or character. So it doesn't specify that they don't get lookout, sir. Just, hey, if they fail it, then they're taking a wound, probably.
So Arrow Kurnos. Ready?
Sounds scary.
Once deployment is complete, before the roll-off to determine which player takes the first turn, if the general of your opponent's army is within 36 inches of one or more models in your army that has a special rule, one of those models may fire the Arrow of Kurnos. So, if you and I are playing a game after deployment, if your general is within 36 inches of one of my Glade Lords or Glade Captains, I can shoot an arrow at it, okay?
Oh, this is before the
game even starts.
Game starts thing, okay.
If the arrow's fired, the general of your opponent's army immediately suffers a strength 3 hit with no armor saves or regen. Just plink.
Whoa. Okay. No armor?
No armor or regen.
Or regen. That's brutal. Yeah, I mean, it's only strength 3, so it's going to be wounding on at least a 5.
Right.
Almost always.
Not for you.
My general's going to be on a dragon if I'm playing high elves. Come on.
That's fair.
We've talked about how good they are.
or a stupid, whatever the heck that big flying stupid thing is. Griffin. No.
Is it a Griffin? Stupid thing. Yes, Griffin.
But if I do shoot it, you get a +1 to your who takes the first turn. So if you finish deploying first and I shoot this, you get a +2, which sounds cool.
Depending on the scenario, yeah.
Right. But that can
be brutal at a lower points value if your general's like a hero level character that only has 2 wounds, and so you get a wound through with this. Yikes.
But the nice thing is you still get a lookout, sir. Right?
I don't know. Well, okay, so
Generally, your opponent army. Oh, maybe not, because he just not suffers. Targeted.
He just suffers a strength three hit. Because he's not really a. I don't know. That one's tough because you're not declaring an attack or anything right. like that. But it says special rules, which this clearly is, allow specific models within a unit to be targeted. Do they ignore lookout, sir? No. So I feel like this, you would still get the lookout, sir, here. Even with the FAQ, it's still a little fuzzy.
Oh, okay, here. So if a character is hit by a shooting attack, and if there are five or more rank or file models, the character can make a lookout, sir, roll.
There you go. That's not a shooting attack.
Correct.
Okay. You're interesting. Not rolling to hit. It's not during the shooting phase.
Yep.
Boom. Answered. Nice job.
Don't get a lookout, sir. We did it. Woo. Why go to the GW website for FAQs when you can just have us?
All right, you got BES for that. How about onto weapons? Do special rules conferred by a model's weapon apply to attacks made by that model's mount? No. The mount isn't using the weapon. Ugh, I am not reading all of the description here. Your dragon's not holding the sword of speed.
Right.
Sword of swiftness, right? That's the example they use. Like the your dude has it, not the horse they're riding.
So some monsters, next one, have weapons with notes that say they must make or may choose to make one attack or one additional attack with that weapon in combat. Can they make more than one attack with such a weapon? It literally says one.
Right?
So no.
Again, it would say one or more, or it can choose to make as many attacks that it can't, you know, it says one.
Yep.
I like this one. Can a model armed with two hand weapons choose to fight with just one hand weapon?
Yes.
Yes. And
the reason is every single mini is equipped with a hand weapon.
Very interesting choice there.
Yep.
I'm surprised they said yes, but I like the reasoning why. Yep. Unless it says otherwise, they are assumed to have a hand weapon. So like if you're a chaos warrior dude with two hand weapons, but you're like, oh, I want a little more armor punch instead of an extra attack, I'm going to switch to just my single ensorcelled weapon. So now I have AP 1, it might be worth it.
Yep. Now this next one's a little confusing with the FAQ that happened earlier. When can a model use a lance? It's any turn in which it charged or counts as having charged.
Oh my God, it's almost like it's in the rules for lance.
So here's so the issue is I was, you know, there are our old scenario where if you like fall back in good order or whatever, can I change my weapon that I'm using? And that one said no. But this says anytime I count as having charge, I can use a lance.
Right, because the lance has a note that it breaks that rule specifically.
That's silly. Anyway, you
can switch back to lance, and the model's assumed to be carrying enough lances to keep charging.
So I think, and I very well could be wrong, but I think back in the day, knights who took lances, a lot of them actually, when they dropped them, they were like on the horse. They were like stuck somehow onto the horse, but I could be very wrong.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly, but I like that. That one clarifies it again.
Yep.
You charged or count as charging as if you're, pursuing somebody that fell back in good order. You know, when you follow up somebody giving ground, that does not count as a charge. You're only going 2 inches anyway.
Yep. So this next one is for the AOS players. Can a missile weapon be used in combat? No.
That's such a good way to say it.
Come on. And that's
no, you're in combat. You use melee weapons. Read right. the rules.
Oh, and again, it's totally fine that there are a lot of people from Sigmar who are trying out Old World. I love this, but this is just for Age of Sigmar players, right?
Right, it's got to be. I love this next one, Round of War Machines. Can a cannon be shot in such a way as to hit an enemy unit that is engaged in combat with a friendly unit? No.
Yeah, no.
Page 143, although they even give a page number. Page 143 of the rulebook makes it clear that except in rare cases, units cannot shoot enemy units that are engaged in combat. In the case of cannon, this means the target point cannot be placed in such a way as to risk the cannonball hitting a friendly unit or an enemy unit engaged in combat with a friendly unit. I'm not the biggest fan of this answer. I like the idea that you can't like target that unit with arrows, for risk of hitting your own. But like a cannon, like clipping through the back of a unit that's in combat,
mm-hmm.
it makes sense to me that you'd be able to, but again, for game and balance purposes, I totally get why you can't.
So if we go back to what we said before, when you get into combat, you're not really in those rank and files, right? It's a swirling melee.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah. Can a war machine shoot using the bliss skill of a character that has joined it? No, because a war machine and its crew are treated as a single model. You must use the crew's ballista skill. Makes sense.
What, it's kind of funny, though, because it's like the opposite of the chariot. Like, yes, it's multiple models with one base. War machines are technically one base.
They are a single model.
With one model with multiple bases in a lot of cases.
So a lot, I think, like, people are actually affixing... War Machine bases got a lot bigger.
Yes.
So it's a lot easier to just...
they actually have base sizes now.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to just put the minis on the base, but... Yep. No, I like keeping them separate as wound markers, essentially. But
again, that's in the rules for war machines, yep, that they are a single model. But the fact that you can have a character join it, not being... this one is kind of weird. But like, engineer characters we talked about with dwarves have a rule for this. So, like,
correct,
if they're going to make your war machine better, they have a rule for it.
But I don't think that they're joining the war machine unit.
I mean, like, your engineers, no. It's just in their command range.
That's what I'm saying, like...
Right.
Yeah. So the next one, it's a duh.
I love this one because I've seen people ask it on Facebook. I've seen this question.
Right. So if you and I decide to play a 2000 point game, but my army is 1997 points, can I still take two of something that's limited one to per 1000 points? Yes, guys. Yes.
Such limitations are based on the size of the game you're playing rather than the exact point value of your army.
Right. It's,
right.
It's
you're playing a 2000 point game.
It's assumed that you're not going to make 2000 points. I just want it to be known that in the game I was supposed to play against Andy, the list was 2000 points on the nose.
Right.
Which never happens.
I love it when that happens.
Right.
This next one I like because I haven't looked into the rules much for allies yet, but it's nice to have clarification here. Does an allied contingent have to abide by the restrictions given in the army composition list it's drawn from? Seems like an obvious yes, but there's a bit of an explanation. So it is yes. The allied contingent is a small army within a large army made using a grand army or army of infamy composition list. Within a 2,000 point army, for example, an allied contingent of 500 points would have to spend at least 125, you know, quarter on core, and could spend no more than 250 on characters, and would be unable to include any units limited to 0 to 1 per 1,000 points. This also clarifies what we were talking about before when we kind of realized where it says, you know, 0 to 1 per one full 1,000 points of your game.
Yep.
Now we know definitely that that is the intention there. So,
yep.
Again, good clarification. I don't know why you wouldn't have to follow the typical army composition, because I'm pretty sure that's how the allied rules are written already, but it's there in magenta and white.
I like that.
At least for now, until 1.2 yeah, or whatever.
So, Dan, I actually don't know Earthen Ramparts. I'm not entirely sure what spell that is.
Oh, it's so good. So I used this when I played against my brother. My Skaven had, I believe it's an elementalism spell. So the question is, if a unit upon which Earthen Ramparts has been cast is obliged to declare a charge, such as if it's frenzied or impetuous, must it do so? If so, can it make a charge move? So what Earthen Ramparts does is it's an enchantment spell, enhancement spell. It's a buff spell that you cast, yep, in the strategy phase that gives the whole unit a 5+ ward save.
Dope.
Awesome. But they can't charge.
Yeah, it says it can't or charge. Yep.
So it says Earthen Ramparts does not prevent a unit from declaring a charge. It prevents it from charging. In other words, yes, the unit must declare a charge if obliged to do so. However, because the unit cannot charge, it does not move at all, and the charge has failed. I like that they're keeping it consistent with their other ruling there. So, like, again, yeah, it might not be a bad thing if you have this on a thing that causes terror. So you still,
yeah, fair.
You're still declaring the charges. You still have to make a terror test. They might run away and you'd be like, oh, I can't move anyway. Ha ha, nerds.
I have a 5+ ward save and I count as being defended by a low linear obstacle as well. So screw you.
Like this next one builds off it. Can a unit upon which Earthen Ramparts has been cast make a counter charge?
No.
Reaction. No, charge. Because it can't charge. Come on.
Oh, the doppelganger.
There is a clarification about the spectral doppelganger. Can it be used with a magic weapon that allows the wielder to make only a single attack, like Wallopa's one-hit wonder? No, weapons limited to a single attack only inflict a single hit. I don't understand this one. Why? I thought it made 2d6 hits.
So, yes, a single enemy unit the caster engages suffers 2d6 hits resolved using the characteristics and special rules of the caster and any weapon they carry. So, this is a big clarification of...
Why? Why does it do a single hit? Why does it not do 2d6 hits? So I don't understand.
I guess it's the special rule of the weapon that they carry, and the special rule says it only does a single hit.
I guess, yeah. I think this one is just purely for game balancing, for rules writing, you know, yeah, that Wallopa's one-hit wonder should not be getting 2d6 hits on a unit.
Correct.
That's grossy magosy.
Nobody wants that. I mean, the people who play it want it, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, any goblin general is going to want that.
So the last one here in the general is under magic items. Some models can be found in one faction's army list, but can be included in an army made using the composition list belonging to a different faction. Like Dragon Ogre Shaggoths, for example, can be found in the Beastman Brayher's army list, but can be taken in an army made using the Warriors of Chaos Grand Army composition. Mm-hmm. What list of magic items do such models have access to?
Good question.
Models
actually
can purchase.
Actually, a good question.
And it's a good question. Models can purchase magic items from the list of common magic items in the Warhammer Old World rulebook, or from their own faction's list of magic items. Dragon Ogre Shaggoth, for example, can purchase items from the common or Beastman Brayherd's magic item lists.
Which is really interesting that you can have a Shaggoth, a Dragon Ogre Shaggoth, in your
Warriors.
In your Warriors of Chaos army, but uses magic items from the Beastman book.
That's weird.
So it can take magic items up to a total of 50 points. So I'm just going to see if I can find one that just seems totally out of place.
That's super neat. So what was the item that you said you would put on this thing?
Oh, the Pelt of the Dark Young. So it's got a +1 armor save. I think that gives it a 3+ because it has... there it is. Yeah, it has a light armor, but it also has armored hide too. So it has a 4+ save, and then give it that. So it has a 3+ save and magic resistance -2.
Yeah, that's dope.
Yeah, Shaggoths are awesome.
And it's a monstrous creature. It's not a behemoth.
Yeah.
Oof. I can't wait to do. Yeah, so it's a light armor with armored hide 2, and then improve armor by 1.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah, I can't wait to get my Dragon Ogres on square bases again. Dragon Ogres and the Shaggoth.
Poor dude.
Woo!
You just went through it too. Leave it.
I've actually bet I started the process tonight earlier of rebasing my demons that aren't on like standard bases.
Sure.
Because a bunch of my like Blood Crushers are on weird size bases that you can't really, they wouldn't fit on a movement tray converter. So it's like, you know, your whatever round base is just, I'm taking them off. I had a bunch of 50x75s from something in the past that I'm putting them on. And I just need to get a bunch more for like plague drones as well. And Dragon Ogres and the Shaggoth. And I need a bunch of 50x75s.
Unfortunately, I can't help you there, bud. Sorry.
Gimme. But yeah, so that's all the errata. It's funny, before we started recording, we were saying like, oh, this will be a nice quick one. We don't, you know, if we don't get to an hour, that's not the end of the world. And here we are at an hour 20 again.
Right.
And we haven't even talked about the FAQ and errata specifically for Ravening Hordes and Forces of Fantasy and the Legacy errata.
Well, here's the good news. The Legacy stuff is all in one absolutely fantastic list of all the changes by somebody named Ben. Thank you, Ben, for throwing all of this together. If I remember, I'll put a link in the show notes for exactly where you can find this. It's super dope. It goes over every change for every single one. So Chaos Dwarves had one change. Here it is. Dark Elves had 3. It's right there. Lizardmen had 5.
I really appreciate what he did in this as well, where it's like he took a little snip of the change, and then like at the bottom, this is the change, like Slan. Yep. Copied the whole profile for the Slan. It says becomes monstrous creature, used to be monstrous infantry, gained close order. Yeah. Which is actually terrible for the Slan. People are mad about that one. I really appreciate that he, I don't know, because it says if you have any questions or like other things that he may have missed, email benmessenger11@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. I don't know if like if Messenger is actually his last name or if it's like I'm going to use this is like a throwaway email so I don't get spam later on. But either way, somebody named Ben, maybe Ben Messenger. Hopefully they listen to this and thank you for putting this together, because I think we'll have to do a part two on this.
Yeah, for sure. And there's a lot that has changed for Ravening Hordes, for their FAQ in Errata, and a lot that has changed for the Forces of Fantasy. I mean, like, one of them is Chaos Steeds just have counter charge because, you know, Chaos needed more. So this is just super dope.
Huge.
It's super dope. So yeah, we'll have to see you guys again in part two. Because I'm exhausted and I need to go to bed. I don't know about you, Dan.
It's time for Betty Bye.
It's definitely Betty Bye time. And in part two, we'll have to talk about Full Tilt, which is full rules for jousting tournaments.
Oh, yes. I forgot to read those rules. I'm glad we didn't get to it today.
Oh, my gosh. It looks like so much fun. When I first originally saw it, I was like, are these just like more rules for like Warhammer sanctioned tournaments? Wait, this is jousting? I gotta talk to Dr. D about this.
It's a free PDF right on that same downloads page as everything else.
Yeah. Yep.
With the Errata, with the Legacy Armies, and Full Tilt.
It's so dope. Speaking of Ben's, we're gonna have to play with Rev Reitman, and we're gonna have to do some jousting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you can use whatever cavalry. So I've got some Chaos Knights built and primed metal. I gotta get them painted.
I think it's only Bretonians, but I could be wrong.
No, I want to use all my other knights.
I think it's only Bretonia. So we'll have to read through those again, and we'll go through it. But anyways, folks, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate every single one of you so very, very, very much. Check out everything we do over at professionalcasual.com. You can find all our other socials there. We do podcasts all the time. If you're into Warhammer, which obviously you are because you're here, you can check out our podcasts on Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay with FERP. We do, what, 4th edition and 2nd edition and 3rd edition and 8th edition and 20th edition. We're doing everything now.
What are you talking about?
Grim Podcast, Perilous Adventure, and then there's, what are you doing now, Doomstones?
Which is 2nd edition, right? Yeah, the Valley of the Doomed. That'll be out soon at which is time super dope. Of recording this. We're almost there. Scheduling has been a pain.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're all parents, right? We've got
five people involved. It's always difficult.
We do some blogs over there, whether it's hobbying blogs by Dr. D or Lindsay or potentially even Dan or myself. Dan actually did one about Wooferp, Lustria, right? You went over?
Yeah, I've been reviewing different books from Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay if you are interested in learning more about
it. And it's a great time, especially go check out Gapapa. It's such a good show. We've got merch. Everything's over there. Go check it out. Twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, where we play all the games Monday 6 to 8 Eastern. I'm painting, hobby hangout. We actually have something coming out pretty soon where a friend of the network, Charles, and I are going to be taking like a month or a month and a half to paint up the same miniature and have a little contest. Everybody who's in our Discord, check the show notes, will be able to vote on who painted that same miniature better, him or I.
Oh,
and then in future, we're going to open this up to probably a professional casual painting competition where we will all order the same miniature and go ahead and paint that up.
Iceman.
But very potentially. The one that I have now is Aline from monumenthobbies.com, code professional casual, for some money off. And she's just a big old resin, like cyberpunk looking chick with this huge gun. It's super cool.
Is it one of the busts they have or?
No, it's a full mini. It's got this like awesome base, this rocky base. I'm going to show Dan on camera right now. Got this big old rocky base that she stands on. Like,
cool.
It's super neat. Here, I'll show you the actual lady.
Yo, that looks dope. Is that right? A giant gun behind her?
She a huge gun.
That's anyways, a real folks, big gun.
You can check that out on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork. I'll be painting her at some point. We do. Oh, yeah. The Power Phase, which is a Tuesday night show at 8 p.m. Eastern. where we will be playing either MCP or Shatterpoint, maybe some Old World. We'll get some sort of miniatures game on there. And then Tim streams almost every single weekday playing some video games.
Don't forget the YouTube. Yeah, we got a couple battle reports up there of Old World. We're definitely planning on getting more as we can find time for it.
Yep.
in addition to everything else we're doing, we definitely plan on playing a lot more Old World and getting more up there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super excited to get more than 500 point games in there.
Yes,
for sure. Frontline Gaming, buy all of your tickets and your mats and your terrain and your everything from our affiliate link. Helps us out directly, and you're still saving the same amount of money. And I think that's it for right now, folks. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate every single one of you so much, especially you, Dan. Thanks for being here.
And thank you for being here.
Tim, we missed you and we love you.
He's sent us some videos and memes in the Old World chat we got to catch up on, too.
Right.
Something about Cliff Jumper yelling about something, I think.
I love Cliff Jumper.
Thanks, Cliff Jumper.
All right, we'll see you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, check out all the other great shows here at the Professional Casual Network. Like what, Danny?
I'll tell you. On Mondays, we've got the Lost Omens podcast, our Pathfinder 2e actual play, hosted by me, playing through the Extinction Curse AP. Also, streaming on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, you can check out, oh yeah, The Power Phase, our Marvel Crisis Protocol live battle report show. On Tuesdays, the podcast version of Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog is available. On Wednesdays, alternating releases on the Patreon, we have Settling the Southlands, our homebrew Wolfthorp actual play, and The Slithering, a Pathfinder 2nd edition actual play. And on Thursdays, live at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/professionalcasualnetwork, we've got Wait, Did I Roll a Wild? Our Marvel Crisis Protocol Povlog.
You can also check out back episodes of Elite Eight Showdown and the first 39 episodes of the Lost Omens podcast, the first 24 episodes of Settling the Southlands, and the first handful of episodes of The Slithering on the YouTube at youtube.com/theprofessionalcasual.